Welcome to the School Sucks Project, a podcast, YouTube channel, and online community dedicated to personal growth and intellectual self-defense. Please remember to visit schoolsucksproject.com to get comprehensive show notes, relevant links,
or to just leave comments.
Follow us on Twitter at School Sucks Show. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, username School Sucks Podcast, and get involved in our Facebook group. Just search for School Sucks Project. Everybody's waiting.
There's nothing wrong with cults. If you can buy the ticket, take the ride, and drink a little bit of the Kool-Aid with understanding that you're actually doing it, there's a lot to be gained there. So from religion to rationalists to magic and Wicca and all of the crazy, I've looked into a lot of it because I always struggled against myself. And as a grown-ass man with two kids who are about out on their own and the ability to do what I want with my own time, what is that? Continue to gain an understanding of it, meaning me. What I was looking for was a choose-your-own-adventure thing that I could play, I could input in my life 10, 15, 20 minutes a day that would allow me to maintain constant awareness so I can maintain my practice of being here now so I can be the master of my own game. But I wanted something that allowed me to do that. Choose your own adventure, personal advancement game. That's what it is. Dude, it's a game.
This is Brett. You are listening to School Sucks. Today is Monday, October 26th. I'm very pleased. You know how I always talk about being very pleased? Today is no exception. I'm very pleased to welcome a first-time guest. His name is Landon Porter. I first made Landon's acquaintance about a year and a half ago. I've really admired this guy for a long time. In fact, I'll tell you a story. So I started working with Landon on his podcast, The Sales Gorilla, 2018. Nathan Frazier, who was the producer, he tells me a little bit about the show, and I say, yes, this is the kind of thing I need to be involved in. So I start listening, and I go, oh, this host is a little brash. And then like two or three episodes later, I was like, this is definitely one of the greatest guys. And not only did I help produce the show, but I listened to every episode after that and went back and listened to some older ones too. And it's still out there if you want to do it. And I mentioned Landon's brashness because this is not a thing that a host usually says at the beginning of the podcast. Some of you might not like him. In fact, I'm going to throw out some numbers kind of arbitrarily here. You ever be talking to a guy and he starts throwing out percentages? Those people are nuts. But I'm just doing it as a thought experiment. I think if I put this episode out, 90% of people didn't like Landon and 10% of people loved him, he'd be perfectly happy with that. You know, one of the most important lessons of the Sales Gorilla podcast, one of the repeated lines on the show was, be your weird-ass self. In that, whether we're talking about our personal lives or our work, one of the keys to happiness is expressing who you actually are, attracting the people you're going to attract, and not frustrating yourself by trying to be all things to all people. And when it comes to sales or getting clients or listeners or viewers, whatever you're doing, your authenticity helps you filter out the people you don't want in your world. And that, of course, helps you make more space for the people you do want. So there's nothing antagonistic about this. It's not like Landon, says, oh, geez, that guy Terry who listens to School Sucks and his girlfriend Becky, as a matter of fact, I want them to be my enemies. It's more just like, you know, that guy Arthur. I feel like we could really jive. That's a nice, strong name, too, Arthur. So Landon is currently launching a new project called Dude, It's a Game. You can learn more at dudeitsagame.com. You'll hear us talk about this as well, but he's taken a very interesting, integral approach to the topic of personal development, and he's found some really clever and engaging ways to present a lot of the same material that we've covered here on School Sucks, and a lot of material that we have really never touched. I like that feeling. I always think that's interesting when you encounter somebody and you're like, wow, you know a lot of the same things that I know, and you came at it from kind of a different direction. So what do you know that I might not know? Let's talk about that. This is definitely one of those situations. I was over-preparing for this show. I was making a very big outline. And then like the last minute, half hour before we started, I was kind of nervous, actually. It's always nerve-wracking when you have somebody on the show for the first time. I was like, I'm throwing this out and we're just going to go for it. He was really happy with that approach to the conversation. I was really happy with that approach to the conversation. And I think a lot of people in our audience will benefit from taking a closer look at his work. So a busy week coming up in the world. Halloween is right around the corner. I'm going to be doing a couple fun Halloween things on the show. One with our friend Nathan Frazier for our bonus show, Emotional Manipulators for Hire. We're recording that this week. I'm not going to tell you anything about that. All I'm saying is it has a touch of Halloween in it. And Professor CJ and I are actually going to be doing a kind of scary movie analysis. Other than that, the only thing that I have to really tell you right now is that this is a listener-supported show. We have an entire membership community we create special exclusive content for. This includes the show with Nathan, the show with Danny McCarthy and Kevin Cole in Pursuit of Utopia. I'm really enjoying these university weekly discussion groups, and now I'm like putting them together into series. We just did a big one on Russian disinformation. You might have heard about this, Russian disinformation. I mean, these Russians, you know, you could do everything right your whole life. You could be the most upstanding, respectable, honest, and crack cocaine abstinent type of guy. And these Russians will come along and ruin your life. We confront schemes like that on this show. We just did a review of the Netflix documentary, The Social Dilemma, that should be coming out next week as well. And if you want access to this stuff and you want to just let me know that you're enjoying all of the great stuff that we put out for free, please go to schoolsucksproject.com/AV to join the AV Club to see all of our support options. The easiest way to get access to all of the exclusive supporter-only content that we've done going all the way back to 2016 is to go to patreon.com/schoolsucks and sign up to contribute $1 per content item. This is an appeal to authority. My mom has been listening to this show, and she's just like, I can't believe how great it is. I can't even believe the quality, the production quality, and the educational value of this content that you're just putting out there for free. It's like coming out of Plato's cave, she says. I added the last part, but she said the other stuff. And I actually have it on tape. She said I could include it in a future show. It's not ready for today. I'm going to include my mom just raving about School Sucks in a future show. But you know who else needs to be listening to this? Your mom. Yeah, Terry, I said it. But I can't attract all the baby boomer moms who really would benefit from this message without your help. So please support us. There's lots of great perks for doing so. All right, that's it. Here is my conversation with Landon Porter. It's kind of a buffet. And you hear me say at the end of the show, I'll have him back for a more focused conversation. One more thing before we get started. I am going to include a clip of Landon speaking very briefly on another podcast called Book of Experts about outcome goals versus value goals. And you'll see why I'm a fan. Thanks for listening. Here we go.
We have all of these reasons for trying to accomplish what we're trying to accomplish, whether it's we're trying to prove something to somebody or we're trying to become accepted, right? Live up or beyond other people's expectations. There's all these reasons. We want this thing, this pile of money, because, well, that shows that my life must look like this. Everybody, and I'm not kidding, everybody that came through my client acquisition world, 630 some clients, every one of them was trying to achieve an outcome. And it's difficult to achieve an outcome. They look at other people and they go, well, so-and-so has this giant audience and they're always making these offers and people are always ranting and raving about how awesome their stuff is. I do the exact same thing. And I've had conversations with that person. I know my stuff's better. Like, what the hell? That individual is not going after an outcome. They are playing with their crayons. They're doing daily, day-to-day, what it is that lights them up and excites them. And the byproduct of that, the outcome of that, is money and audience, ongoing stuff, and life's amazing. And right. So we're always going after this thing that's a score on a board somewhere. And here's my question. Says who? Who determined that's the score that you ought to be going after? And almost invariably, it ends up being, well, that's what my dad wanted for me, or my mom thought I should be, or so-and-so because of this and that and the other, my wife, blah, blah, blah. And they never are in the clarity of, I love waking up every day doing the thing that I do because it brings me joy to do the thing. And because it's amazing, I share it, right? That's, I'm doing something because I actually value the doing of it instead of I'm trying to get this thing. Most of us really smart monkeys, when we're trying to get a thing, we keep it just out of reach because we need something to chase. Unless we know what it is we want to spend our time doing, then there's no chasing.
I feel like I always say to first-time guests, this is long overdue. I always mean it, you know, sincerely, but you're a guy, the more I've learned about the work you've done and the work you're just starting to do, I really wish I had you on my show like 11 years ago, or I encountered you that long ago when I first started this project. And in the conversation today, we're going to reveal to the audience why that is. But I want to give people some background and you can fill in the blanks where I create them. We first encountered each other back in 2018. You were doing a podcast called The Sales Gorilla. And I worked for you doing audio and video production. You made it to about, I think, right at 100 episodes. You pulled the plug on the Sales Gorilla podcast. And I said, shit, because I liked working for you. And I liked listening to it after I worked for you. Then we reconnected recently because you had a new project that I was really excited about. But just to introduce you to my audience, I think The Sales Gorilla really focused on the importance of relationship building in doing sales without being salesy. That was the tagline of the show. You've built on top of that a new project more focused on building better relationships with self. Such a neglected aspect in so many pursuits, whether they're professional or personal or, you know, outreach, activism. Like, there's so many people who are just leaving that piece out of the equation. So I was really excited to talk to you about how you got to where you were with Sales Gorilla, because I used to listen to it and I would say, where did this guy come from? You never really went into detail much about your background or what you were doing. So I wanted to actually start there before we move on to the new project. Just my own curiosity, like, what was your career like? What did you do? What did you encounter? What did you learn that led to the Sales Gorilla project when you started it?
Sure. So I'm gonna give you that answer, and then I need to give you the preface to really make it make sense.
Yes.
So right out of high school, I became a chef. I did an old school apprenticeship to become a chef, and it was awesome. I'm an eater. I was raised by women who knew how to cook, and it was go be a chef or go do cars, because I wasn't interested in going to college, right? So nights, weekends, and holidays didn't work very well for raising kids. And I had kids at 24. So I was essentially done with my college. My apprenticeship was my college. It was 4 years long in total. So that put me at like 22, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so 2 years later, I've got kids and I'm in the food industry and it's not working. Being married, raising two little kids, like, it's not working. So I ended up in sales. I had, my dad and his longtime best friend were in the car business for, at that point, 20 years. And my Uncle Rod, as I called him when I was a kid, wholesaled several-year-old European sports cars. He didn't work very much. He made really good money, and he got to drive a bunch of really cool cars. So I'm 24. I spend the summer working with him wholesaling high-end, lightly used sports cars. And it was awesome. And during that time, I met a kid who was buying for cash an old school Bronco for like 30 grand. And he was 2 or 3 years older than me and, dressed in nice clothes, kind of, you know, I'm a kid at this point. I was mature, but I was a kid at this point. And he was with it, right? He had money, he had cash, became friends with him. He had this big house downtown. and he was in the mortgage business. Right. So I ended up in the mortgage business and real estate. And I did that for about 4.5, almost 5 years. And I saw the market coming. Right. So in that time, I grew up a lot, got divorced. Now I'm a single father. Right. So money's really important, but so is what it is that I'm doing and the stability of what I'm doing. So it's 2005 and I see what's going on in the real estate market and the people that are getting loans. And I was just like, this isn't going to last forever. So in 2006, I started looking for something that if the market went a different way, then, you know, everybody, you get $1 million, you're breathing, you get $1 million, right? You can buy whatever you want.
Yeah.
So in 2006, I started looking for a job in sales because I found that I was really good at it, building the relationship piece. And I ended up working for a company that sold financial protection globally. So asset management and asset protection to businesses, credit insurance, corporate collections, credit information, factoring, right? High ticket, big money to corporate world. So I spent a decade in that industry, and that's really where I kind of honed my sales process, if you will. I was about 2.5 years into that. So about 7 years into my sales career total. And it's 4:34 in the morning on a Wednesday. Like, I remember this part of my origin story, so to speak. But I'm staring at myself in the mirror and I'm like, man, I hate you. Like, I fucking hate you.
Yeah.
And like, I've got my at the time, and she's still my wife, my best friend. She's beautiful, amazing. We've got this awesome house. We're raising two little kids, you know. She's stepmom, and like, life's amazing. I'm making more money than really ought to be allowed. Right. And I'm miserable. And it didn't hit me immediately, but over the course of the coming months, it occurred to me that what I was doing with my time, moment to moment, daily, was what was causing me to be miserable. And what that was I got so good at the sales thing that if they stayed on the phone, they bought, right? It's either yes or hang up, period. And that's excellent as a sales guy goes, because, like, you know, if they're breathing and half conscious, they can turn into money for me. Mm-hmm. The problem with that in the industry that I came from was the money wasn't made on the front end. The money was made on the back end, managing the client relationship. So I've got hundreds, literally 450 some clients that are active clients, most of which I can't stand, like literally cannot stand them. And I'm spending Monday through Friday dealing with people I can't stand. And it's tied to everything else, my stability, my security, my money, my wants and needs, tied to everything. And I'm doing this thing that I hate, but I'm really good at it. And so I quit that industry. I quit my job. It was, I recognized that in like July, by my birthday in October, which is coming up here at the end of this week as we're recording this. I walked into my boss's office and I said, I quit. I was the top guy in our office. I was one of the top three in the company globally at what I did. And I said, I quit. I'm done. And they're like, are you high? And I was like, not currently.
Yeah.
And I quit. I gave all my clients away. And about 3.5-4 weeks later, they finally talked me into coming back. So here I am with none of my clients that I spent the last several years creating, you know, this book of clients for myself. And I had an option: do this the same way that I did it, end up in the same place, hating life and myself, or figure out a different way to do this. The punchline is I went with the latter, and I created a completely different way to do the client acquisition thing, the sales piece, the marketing piece. And I went from cold calling about 300 dials a day to about a dozen a month. And within 6 months, I was again the top guy in my company, one of the top guys in the industry, and radically changed how I did it. Now, that's the preface for this. Mm-hmm. Fast forward about another 5 years, and I'm just done, right? So I've been in sales at that point for about 15 years, and I'd been with in this industry for about a decade, and I was just done. I wanted to do something for myself. I wanted to do something where I didn't have to go to an office, right? Like, I was working from home mostly. They'd put me on airplanes to go see clients, and I didn't want to do it anymore. So my wife and I decided that we were going to do our own thing. And I've been following this internet marketing thing since 98, right? It's one of my little passions, the whole, how do you build an audience and connect with them? And so we went into helping parents of preteens who were struggling with access to the internet via their devices, because we had preteens at that point who'd gone through that, and we didn't have those same issues most parents do. And Ash and I are both really up on technology. It's one of our things. And we had friends asking us that summer. I quit the company that I was working for. I subbed for a friend of mine who was running another company to help him out for about 6 months. And during that time, we had a couple of friends asking us, like, don't you have these kinds of problems with your kids? And we're like, no, like, why would we? Long story short, we ended up creating a course and a community and doing coaching around helping parents of preteens who were having really hard times with their kids being on the internet and having no idea what kind of trouble they were getting in.
So before you go on, can you just define that problem, like how you presented that to potential clients?
Sure. So what it ultimately came down to is that in our day and age, and this goes back 5, 6, 7 years from now, in our day and age, kids that are 11, 12, 13, 14 basically have to have a smartphone at minimum, right? Or they've got an iPad, or they've got a computer, or they've got 9 different devices, and their parents are being called into school, or their parents are having to answer the door because the police are knocking on the door because the kid did something stupid like sent naked pictures, or they're bullying other kids. Like, I mean, the list goes on and on and on, right?
Right.
Kids are doing stuff that they don't really understand the consequences of, but because we've got access, or they've got access to technology, it's out there. And once it's out there, there's no getting it back, right? So we, Ash and I, had set specific boundaries with our kids, and we're paying attention. And this is a big one, right? Life's moving really fast. Parents have a really hard time keeping up with their kids. And so usually there's a problem because something has already occurred. And oh my God, what do I do now? Right? All these hidden accounts that these kids have on Instagram and all this stuff, and their parents have no idea about it. So the problem ultimately came down to this. Your kids are connected to the internet, and they're either doing dangerous stuff or they're interacting with dangerous people, and you don't have any idea, and therefore you can't protect them.
Right.
Would you like to know how? That was ultimately the message.
This is totally a selfish question. Does this course still exist?
No, not really.
Well, let's talk about that some other time. Cool. I'm fascinated. It's funny that in an alternate reality, at the time that you're probably developing and selling this, I'm over here doing this podcast saying that this is what's going to set everybody free. You know, maybe a little bit before that, I think like 6, 7 years ago, I was starting to realize a lot of the challenges with young people being online and the targets that were all over them, right? It's interesting. I spent my entire morning wrapped up in The Social Dilemma, that new documentary. I had a discussion group this morning where we're trying to pick it apart. Why is it on Netflix? What's the agenda? So that has been like my focus this entire morning before I transitioned into this this conversation with you. So I had no idea. I'm so glad I asked that question. I'm fascinated that you did this. It could be a tangent into a whole conversation that uses up the rest of the time we have together. But another thing I just want to go back to, again, my own curiosity. How did the company convince you to go back after you had like freed yourself from this thing that you hate, like land and come back, but with none of the clients that you had before and build everything from scratch? And right. Why did you do it?
Well, my best friend was the branch manager of the branch that I worked for. Mm-hmm. And later on in that part of my sales career, when I again quit that company and went to work for another company, it was him that was running that other company. And he we're best friends, right? Like we hang out outside of work. He's 3 or 4 years older than me. We're really tight. And so one of the things about me is that if I have to play on somebody else's team, I will get in and learn how to play, and I will figure out how to play my part well enough to be able to do what I want. Meaning this, I've got a giant beard. For those of you listening, you can't see this. I've got a giant beard. I rocked a giant beard for like 4 years out of the 10 that I was a client acquisition specialist for Fortune 100 companies. That's what I ended up being for this company. Long hair, I wear heavy metal t-shirts and jeans and boots, right? Well, in that industry, it's slacks and a dress shirt. Mm. Not for me, right? If I wasn't going out of town to see a client, I'd show up in flip-flop shorts and a t-shirt because that's me, right? Well, I had all of these special arrangements because I was the golden goose, right? I turned phone calls into profit. So because I had that ability, basically all of the other things that were causing me to be frustrated with everything that I did was taken off the table. They basically said, do what you want. And what that ultimately came down to, the reason I eventually quit when I did around my birthday that first time was because they had me pursuing Monsanto. Yeah. And I'm a fucking tree hugger and Monsanto is the devil, right? But I was within a meeting or two of bringing Monsanto on as a client to manage. And I fucking had enough. That was it.
Yeah.
So when they said, do what you want, do it how you want, do it when you want, right? Do it from home if you want. We don't care. Just make money for us. Okay. The other part of that was I just spent 5 years in this industry, and the industry that I came from, I wasn't interested in going back to, and I'd painted myself in the corner, right? I made really good money. And I was at this point, I mean, this is still 11, 12 years, 13 years ago, I was making really good money. Mm-hmm. So what other options did I have? Everybody in the industry knew me. I could call up any Fortune 100 company and within 3 minutes, they knew who I was, why I was on the phone. I had a brand. I had a name.
So we're talking, you're 30 years old at the time, roughly, right?
Yep.
Realizing this incredible success that, you know, people, we're actually interesting. I think we're almost exactly the same age. I might be like 2 months older than you now that I know really? When your birthday is. Yes. People of our generation doing that well at 30 is uncommon. So then you're in this situation. You feel like, what do they call it? Golden handcuffs.
Totally.
And did you have any other vision? Like when you quit for the first time, were you starting to form a vision of what else you might do? Or was not having something like that in place one of the reasons that led you back?
Not having something in place was the thing that led me back. You know, like I said, I've been interested in this whole internet marketing, online marketing, direct response marketing thing for a long time. But interested in it as something I spend my free time exploring is a completely different thing than becoming a practitioner. I wasn't at that time a practitioner at direct response marketing via the internet. I use the telephone, mm-hmm. right? Like, so I had this vision. I had this idea. I want to do something of my own, no idea what it was. And I had nothing in place to be able to do that. Right. So they talked me into coming back, and I spent a little more than 5 more years in that industry across 3 companies. It's gross to think about it. I'm actually sitting, you and I've been on video calls a bunch, so you have to have recognized this chair. It's an old beat up executive office chair. Mm-hmm. Like, I can afford a brand new chair. Why don't I buy one? Mm-hmm. Because I had this one in my hands over my head, getting ready to throw it through a window so I could jump out the window into the parking lot. Mm. Right. It was that kind of industry. And it was that kind of lifestyle. And because I didn't have something to pursue that we're going back, let's call it 9 years and change. My kids are 8 and 9, right? I've got still a lot of responsibility to produce. And most of the people that I know who have made really good money figure out how to put use to most of that money in a non-productive way.
Yeah.
And that's the life that I was living. Right. So I ultimately had a choice. I could have done anything else, but within a couple of months to be making 10, 15, 20 grand a month, I really had no other in my mind at the time option.
Okay. So you didn't have, to use your language, what you call at that time a fuck yeah, right? You used to say this on Sales Guerrilla, and it was in one of your newsletters that I just read recently too. The quote is, if it's not a fuck yeah, it's a fuck no. right? Our time is precious. The attention that we have to devote to different things is precious. The resources that we have to give to ourselves and to our relationships with other people are precious. So like that is sort of the calculation that you do when you're trying to make a decision, and you don't have the fuck yeah at that time. So this thing, I'm gonna ask a kind of a bunch of questions together here. This thing that you started doing, this course on technological self-defense for young people, the course was probably more for parents. Did that fill the bill as that? Or was it like a comparison between the rewards you guys got from doing that and your job, right? And all of these things about this job that you didn't like that kind of led you into the messaging and the project of Sales Guerrilla? Was this thing your first fuck yeah, or was Sales Guerrilla, that whole enterprise, your first fuck yeah?
So the parenting thing was the first fuck yeah. And there's a couple of other pieces that were going on at the same time. I'm also a food guy, and I'm a bit of a hippie. And I worked in the food industry for a company that no longer exists. They were acquired by Whole Paycheck. I mean, Whole Foods. But I learned a lot about food and where our food comes from and all the stuff that goes into our food and all that. So we had a food thing going on at the same time, and we had the parenting thing going on at the same time, but there was enough pull about the parenting thing that we were quickly, and this is before like Facebook groups didn't really even exist, but we were forming a community of parents who were looking for solutions dealing with their kids being on the internet. And it just began to kind of not take off on its own, but there was way less resistance to it. As an example, everybody listening to this now, whether you're a food person or not, has heard the term microbiome. Okay. Well, I was talking about microbiome in 2013 and nobody had a clue what it was, right? So trying to get people to buy something around that didn't make sense. The parenting coaching thing began to kind of gather some steam. Well, it was in that Ash and I were in the middle of doing that, and I was getting ready to run a Facebook ad campaign. So I bought a Facebook ads course, and I'd had several, but this one was new, and the guy who was behind it was kind of outspoken, is probably the best word I could use for it. He's a complete clown, but his marketing was on point, and the way he ran his marketing ads for this course was a no-brainer. It was like $1,000, and I got the course within a week or two. As I do, I've made connections, I'm building friendships, and I'm asking people in the community, how do I run this ad set? Do I use video, or do I run images? Like, right? I'm asking people for guidance and advice, and a couple of people start helping me. Well, reciprocity, I begin understanding them and what they're dealing with and all of that. And turns out none of them can figure out how to land a client. So this is December of 2016, right? And over the course of a couple of weeks, I'm essentially coaching a half a dozen people just on the side on how to turn their trial clients into paid clients. And in January, 5 people in 3 days were like, dude, you need to fucking teach this. And I was like, dude, no, the fuck I don't. I've done sales for 15 years. I'm done. And one of those 5 people said, that's fine, but like, you're going to do this. And the next day she sent me a message. She's like, I created this Facebook group. We're going to call you this. And I want you to go in and do a Facebook Live and tell people what you think about sales. She added like 84, 86 people. Now, mind you, I've got this other thing going on. I'm like spending money running ads on it. Like, we're coaching and talking to parents. Like, there's 500 people in that community. So I was like, whatever, right? Don't go against the grain. Just go with the flow and see what happens. So I go into this Facebook group. I do a Facebook Live. And there's like 45 people on the live for almost an hour. Out of a group of 80 people that were added the day before yesterday, none of these people know me, right? But my demeanor, my personality, and I guess what I was saying was interesting. And the Sales Guerrilla was born. And within 3 or 4 days, people were like posting in the group, can you put together a course? Is there a course? Do you have something that can show us how to do this? And there you go. That was the start of the Sales Guerrilla. It took off. Literally under a month, we had 1,500 people in the group. In 6 weeks, we had the first beta course and a dozen people in the course, and a waiting list for when the course went to full price a couple of months later. Within another 3 months, we had 3,000 people, and it just took off. It took off so fast and so hard on its own that we just put the parent thing on the back burner and kind of walked away from it, never to return, really.
So it's not that you didn't love it. It's not that it got worn out. It's not that it experienced failure. It's just something better, something more lucrative came along that had to take your attention.
The universe said, knock, knock, right?
Yeah. Like,
ultimately, that's what it was. And what's interesting is, like, I really have had a lot of fun in the last 4 years. It's also sales marketing.
Yeah.
Right? This will be interesting how this leads us into the next thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So this, which is very much a kind of train, like I said, focused on relationship building and how that is the keys to success in that industry, you've now moved beyond that. And I would say it happened pretty swiftly. Nathan Frazier, who my audience certainly knows very well, we were working with you. You know, it was like news to me. It was very, very sudden that you were going to move on to this other thing. Obviously, there was more going on behind the scenes that you were getting ready to make this transition. But yeah, I would definitely be really interested in hearing about what that was and how that happened.
Sure. So the one main thing to really understand is the entirety of the sales gorilla. I've always said this. The most important thing on the planet are the relationships, right? Because it's sales, right? Mm-hmm. The most important relationship is the one you have with yourself. Well, turns out that over the last 4+ years that I did the sales gorilla thing, I'm teaching people essentially how to establish and then manage a relationship with themselves. And if they get that piece in place, all the sales tactics and all the marketing crap doesn't need to be even put into play. With the understanding of that, I'm essentially handicapped by having this umbrella of sales and marketing that I've got to play under, right? Right. I've got to sell to that want, that need, that desire, that problem, etc., to get people in my world so I can go, oh, by the way, it's an inner game, one play between you and your identity.
Yeah.
And if we can figure that out, then all this other stuff outside of you just falls into place on its own. But everybody in the sales marketing space, specifically client acquisition, they want, like, I need a client like now because I can't breathe. My chest is tight and my bills aren't paid. I need a client now, right? Just in the wrong space to really be able to utilize that kind of insight or that perspective of here's what's actually needing adjusted, dude.
That's really interesting because what you're describing with what Sales Gorilla was is something that a lot of people do, right? Where it's, hey, this is what you want. And I think about this a lot in sort of trying to reformulate my whole project, where we don't have good drawbridges to the people who actually need our information. We're not speaking the same language, right? This kind of came out of a more political angle, this whole project. And when I started it, back to why I wish I encountered you 11 years ago, it was a hobby. I did other work. I was an educator. And without knowing who I was trying to speak to, the goal just becomes by default, well, be all things to all people, right? You'll find your people eventually. And you wind up like sort of externalizing those like validation and rewards very, very much. And even though I loved the process and I love the work, when you kind of zoom out to the bigger project, it was just trying to be all things to all people. And it was never going to, not all people. I mean, obviously we had our antagonists and our enemies with a name like School Sucks, but it was trying to be too many things to too many people because it was about getting validation externally. So, but if you look at something like pickup artistry, right? It's here's what you want. And then what is actually delivered is what the people need. So you're saying you wanted to go at it more directly, right? Yep. Instead of like selling people what they want or promising people what they want by giving them what they need, it's like, let's eliminate this middleman or let's eliminate this extra step and let's just go right at it.
Not only that, but it also really pre-qualifies the people that I end up having to deal with, right? So let's look at it from that perspective. It's one thing to try and be essentially all things to all people, right? To make ends meet and put enough throughput through the project. That's one thing. It's a completely different thing to be in a position to choose who it is you want to work with, not because you need to make a decision, but because you get to, right? In the client acquisition space, having to speak at a third grade level, because that's where most people who need help with client acquisition are, when I essentially have a PhD in client acquisition, eventually became the bane of that whole thing. Like, I just could not do it anymore. Right. Like, I want to show people how to fly like a martial artist, and I'm having to teach people how to like block. Like, no thanks. The same thing in this next phase, really. At what level do you want to play? In this applies to everybody. If you're an expert third grade teacher and that's the thing you want to do, rock it, right? If you're a master chef, one of 53 globally, and you want to work with people on their basic julienne cuts, like, have at it, right? Most people want to play at the level of experience and knowledge they've got.
Right.
Being everything to all people brings in the bottom 80% of the people in the marketplace.
I get that in a lot of industries that that would definitely be the case. This new project, you mentioned playing at levels. It is called Dude, It's a Game. Can you explain what that means?
The entirety of life from your singular perspective. You can choose to be hard drudgery work-like. It's a test that you hopefully will pass because somebody's paying attention and they're grading you. Mm. Or specifically, if you're an adult, you're the one making the rules and calling the shots. Like, it can be fun. And in the world that we live in, there's a lot of people that are just miserable fuckers.
Yeah.
I was one of them. I can totally speak to it, right? Like, I get it. It's a choice. Dude, it's a game. An inner game played between you and your identity.
Yeah.
Nobody else essentially exists in that game. And when you can figure out how to play that game, the world is your oyster.
Yeah. I don't know if you've ever come across the work of T.K. Coleman, but he was a past guest on my show. I just mentioned him in my most recent show to another guest. He said something to me when he was on my show. And just a little background, T.K. was one of the founding people in this organization called Praxis, which is... an alternative to college in that they put you into an apprentice program and they'll train you. A lot of the people actually do sales. I think the program was 18 months, much shorter than college. And if you complete the requirements of the program successfully, the company you're doing the apprenticeship will offer you a job. While in college, you're languishing there for several more years and just in most cases, acquiring debt. So we talk a lot when I have those guys on the show about career launch and, you know, alternative ways to do that. And, you know, TK was saying, I'm playing such a customized game. Like, I'm going to win my game because nobody else even wants to play it. It's so customized to me. And as I started going through some of your material for Dude, It's a Game, I was seeing the same thing, that there's so many points of choice involved and so many points of deliberation and self-examination that you're really encouraging people who maybe never done this before, but you've built know, like, and trust with them through Sales Guerrilla, that you've on-ramped people into something that's like really a wonderful, essential, rewarding exploration. And this is, you built a relationship with these people, and now through that, you're actually going to help them build this relationship they've needed to have with themselves. I mean, that was kind of what I got from what I saw.
Yeah. And so something interesting that you said, the gentleman you spoke of, TK, making the statement of, I'm playing such a customized game, like, I'm going to win by default because nobody else wants to play this game. That's exactly what I mean. Every human being on the planet has that ability to play their own game. Even if you do sales, there's a million people that do sales. Most of them suck at it, right? Mm. You're playing your own game. And this is such an interesting concept. As we're brought up and as we're taught and trained and programmed and conditioned to what it's like to be a human and what it's like to be in this life in the world, we're taught how to put together puzzles, right? Like, ultimately, that's what being a human is, figuring out what the puzzle is and how to put it together. The vast, vast, vast majority of us never realize that the puzzle we learned how to put together is a practice puzzle. We just keep putting that one together and trying to shove other pieces into it instead of going, hey, I know how to put puzzles together and I've learned on the practice one long enough. Let me put my own puzzle together, right? It's like, I learned how to ride a bike when I was a little kid and I had training wheels on it and I eventually got good enough, but I didn't need them. I never took them off.
Mm.
Why? Right? Like get a bigger bike, get a different bike. It's the same thing with playing our own game.
Yeah. So it's kind of like, this came up on a recent show too, recognizing patterns, like you establish patterns that work and then you take them to a new place.
Human beings are designed to see patterns and then seek out patterns because there's too much information available to us in this reality. Mm-hmm. Our brains, as amazing as they are, can't process all the bits of data that's available to us.
Yeah.
This is where it gets really weird. And some people go, oh, that's woo-woo law of attraction stuff. It's actually science. The human brain sees patterns. That's how we work. And the patterns that we choose to seek out are patterns that we are familiarized with, right? So this is like relationships. If you grew up in an abusive home, you probably end up in a marriage that's abusive one way or the other. We seek out patterns. And rarely do we ever recognize that that's what we're doing. We are meaning-making machines. I forget who said that, but it's somebody awesome. And we seek out patterns. That's what we do. And we're all wired. Most of us don't realize this. We've chosen the patterns that we seek out.
Yeah.
The way your life is the last 3 to 5 years is all based on patterns. And you're going to continue repeating those until you recognize that they're just patterns and you can change what they are.
So one thing that I noticed when I was listening to Sales Guerrilla, working on Sales Guerrilla, and I've noticed it more in going through the content for Dude, It's a Game. You're very, I'm going to use the word integral. We talked about this in a private conversation, but I said, you know, there seems to be a lot of like internal family systems therapy in what you're promoting. There seems to be a lot of cognitive behavioral therapy. You just mentioned like a spiritual component to this. And then currently on my podcast, we're doing a show on integral theory, the work of Ken Wilber. And Nathan, our mutual friend, said to me, this is interesting. Landon has been telling me about this for like a year. So I kind of wanted to hear a little bit about how integral theory or Wilber's work affected you and what you do.
Yep. So very short preface.
Yeah.
I was raised by mainly women. We had a pretty tight-knit family. There were a couple of men in my world, my grandfather, my dad, my granddad, and a couple of uncles who I didn't spend really as much time with as I did the women. And what I noticed was the different demeanors and attitudes and emotional statuses of these different people in my life as I was a child. I'm the oldest of 9 grandkids. I'm the oldest of all the grandkids on both sides. And what I started to notice probably around 7 or 8, maybe 9 or 10 years old, was that everybody had their own way of doing something.
Yeah.
Right. So if I was going to learn how to put something together and I followed my grandfather, he was the guy that would dump the shit out of the box, throw away the instructions and start putting pieces together. Whereas like my mom, she would like the first thing she'd do, she'd read everything on the box. Then she'd open it. She'd pull out the instructions. She'd read through the instructions and take everything out of the box and start putting them together. Right. Just as a simple example, what I noticed was everybody seemed to have their own way. And what was my own way? Well, I was probably 11 or 12 when I heard this. It was actually from my stepfather, whom I don't like now and I didn't like then, but he gave me a bit of advice. I was having a hard time with school and I was having a hard time with my father and my mom, and he was kind of like the third wheel in there. And the bit of advice he gave me was pay attention to what everybody does and take the best, in your opinion, from all of them, right? Just because you don't like somebody doesn't mean there's not something you can learn from them.
Right.
And what that equated to for me was, well, if I pay attention to who's really doing cool stuff and I take the best of all of that and put it together and create my own way, then I've got my own way of doing something. So fast forward 15, 25, 27 years later, right? God, 43. This is a trip. I still feel like I'm 20. Fast forward to, I don't know how many years ago when I was first introduced to integral theory, it totally made sense, right? Every generation, essentially in the evolution of man, we gain a new perspective. Oh, astrology, that's cool, but it's kind of magic. And like, let's take the best of that and let's get rid of this nonsense stuff, right? And let's integrate it into what we think now. And the whole ideology just made sense because that's kind of how I operate my life.
Yeah, I mean, I felt the same. It was the same because I actually, just talking to a friend of mine, we started talking about it as it applied to organizations, what's often referred to as spiral dynamics, back maybe like at the beginning of this year. And then, you know, I said, this is really interesting. And I saw how like multifaceted it was. I saw that, you know, you apply it to the individual, you can apply it to organizations. It applies to sort of all of society, like social and political systems. And I thought, as like a visual spatial learner, I thought some of the like the maps of understanding were really helpful. They do. They throw a lot of charts and colors at you, these integral theory guys. But if you like learning things that way or sense making that way, it was just, it seemed really accessible to me. And I felt the same way. I felt like, you know, my project is very much about that, where we're trying to just take the best of, you know, people will walk away from a gold mine because there's bat turds in it. You know, there's a few bat turds in every gold mine. So that was true where I heard people being dismissed for like minimal or minor flaws. And I guess that's, you know, that's subjective. Some people could think what I think are minor flaws or major flaws. But there was a lot from the world of ideas to integrate. And I think also in trying to make sense of what's going on in the world, where, you know, one of the things that we try to do at School Sucks is help people build their own maps through better critical thinking, through better like media and information literacy. Yeah, you could run into a lot of people who are presenting information, but they're gatekeepers, right? So they make a path that leads up to a gate, and that's where they stop. They're gatekeepers. That's what gatekeepers do. So can we take their path and move it into a bigger map that doesn't have that gate there, or that shows a way to open that gate that somebody else figured out? Yeah, somebody's a gatekeeper if they're the end-all be-all of all the information that you're going to get about some specific thing, but it can be integrated into something larger. And, you know, so just I say that because it's one of our current projects with trying to understand a lot of the tribalism and division that's happening in the world right now. And, you know, I referenced the work of this journalist. His name is Matt Taibbi. He's not somebody that I agree with on a lot of things, but did some very good work on this specific subject. So I shared it on social media and people are like, that guy is a piece of shit and a liar and a gatekeeper. And I said, fine, we'll take his path up to the gate and we'll integrate it into a bigger picture. And that's what we try to do. So I am skeptical of some of the woo around integral theory. I'm still trying to learn, but I'm open-minded and I see it as a very, very interesting project. We've devoted, my friend Wes and I have devoted probably 6 hours of recorded content and probably, in my case, 15, 20 hours of research to trying to understand the Integral World project better. So I just thought that was an interesting synchronicity when, you know, Nathan said, oh yeah, Landon's into this too. And I know you're about to interview him.
Check this out. This will be interesting.
Yeah.
No one has the answers. And we're all talking about the same shit from different perspectives.
Yeah.
Meaning this. What is it we're all doing? We're all seeking understanding.
Yeah.
Period. End of discussion. We are all trying to understand. And we all have bits and pieces of information. The vast majority of it is either colored by our opinion or the people's opinion who we got it from. Right. So if you take humanity and you put humanity on a spectrum and woo as you can gets all the way on one end and science is all the way on the other end.
Yep.
Well, everybody's on that spectrum somewhere with a fragmented understanding of what it is, and the perspective that they're perceiving it from is colored to begin with. Right. The reason that I find integral theory interesting is because really nothing else that I've come across, and I haven't studied it extensively, but the premise is like, duh, like just makes sense to me. Take the best of what's come before you. It's like standing on the shoulder of giants, right? Take the best from your perspective of what's come before you and integrate that, and using the understanding that you gain from that. If somebody believes X, Y, Z, and you don't agree with that, you can certainly argue your point, or you can think that they're a dummy, or you can just say, they're doing their best to understand with the information that they've got and move on.
Yeah.
From this perspective of we're all talking about the same stuff from different perspectives and everybody's right is a completely different viewpoint. This is my take on it. We have our understanding and our view of the world. And when we recognize that that's not set in stone and that's not factual and we might not actually know, then it gets really easy to go, yeah, it's cute that they believe in magic and they believe in the woo-woo stuff and like whatever. Here's the bottom line with that, though. even those words are just labels to demonstrate what we're trying to mean.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Even within the language that we use, call it woo, call it science, call it God, call it higher self, call it evolution, call it whatever you want. It only matters what you call it to the extent that you understand the meaning you're using with that label.
Yeah. Yeah, it was an interesting experience for me because I was in my 20s. I saw that Law of Attraction documentary. I happened to, at the time, live in Salem, Massachusetts, the U.S. capital of woo, right? Where they built their entire town around, you know, the worst thing that ever happened there in 1692, pretty much. So if you go to Salem, Massachusetts, it's all like Wiccan. There's all these New Age bookstores. I mean, you could just walk from one New Age bookstore to another all day in Salem, Massachusetts. There's people dressed up like witches. Every business, their logo incorporates a witch. So it's very, very New Age, Salem. And I would just... You know, I remember it was right the perfect time to like take some documentary, and also I think I was, I wasn't the best critical thinker then, so I saw that documentary. And I was like, this is really interesting. Sure had a lot of beaded jewelry in it. I came from a world where there wasn't a lot of beaded jewelry, so maybe that made me skeptical. But no, I really got bit by a New Age bug there, and I started reading like Robert Anton Wilson and Timothy Leary and Terence McKenna, and I realized a lot of the people that they were referencing, especially Robert Anton Wilson, I remember he wrote this book, Cosmic Trigger. I remember spending a lot of time with this really weird book. A lot of the things that these people were trying to get at as far as wisdom from a very magical direction, just to go back to what you said about like vocabulary, they didn't have the words, they didn't have the concepts, but they knew something, right? They in a lot of it having to do with personal empowerment, personal growth, they were on to something without the language to explain what they were on to. And if you can get over that idea of the labels of woo or pseudoscience or magical or what other words did I slip into the conversation there sort of unconsciously that were kind of judgmental, whatever they were, if you can get over that and just pursue it with an open mind, which is, God, it's gotten so hard to do. You know, it seems like when we look out at the landscape, the conversations that people are having around political, social, any kind of issues, people are really trapped in some echo chambers with some really, really high walls. And that was the other thing that I liked about the Integral Movement was it seemed to have a way to break down those walls while understanding, listening to people like Wilbur talk about the current state of affairs in the world from like 2017 on, I was like, these guys have built some pretty good maps of what's happening right now. But they also, it seemed like it was an opportunity to, you know, see the echo chambers and get outside of them, right? If more people would just think, even if they didn't say, oh, I love Ken Wilber and I love his outfits and I love, you know, that he says this and I'm going to follow him or I'm going to be a devotee. It doesn't require any of that. It's just kind of like inspirational that these people are actually trying to drop their guard and be humble, I think. I mean, that's my read of a lot of people involved in that movement. And, you know, hear all sides, hear what there is to hear, to be open-minded. I mean, this sounds like very, very simple and basic, but it's become a real feat in our current world for people to actually do it.
We're all just walking each other home, right?
Yeah.
I saw a meme yesterday, and it was a picture of this dude in this fancy suit, and there was a talking bubble over his head and said, if I could just meditate 15 minutes a day, I can conquer the world. And behind him was some dude sitting in regular clothes, just kind of sitting down. He said, yeah, meditate for an hour and you won't have that need. Right.
Mm-hmm.
We're all trying to get understanding, toys, money, right? At the end of the day, what does that come down to? A sense of certainty.
Yeah.
Why do we need to understand things? Because we don't have a sense of certainty. If we don't have a sense of certainty, we don't feel safe.
Yeah.
Right. In this crazy climate that we're in. Yeah, it's crazy. And no, I wasn't around in when Vietnam was going on. No, I wasn't around in World War II. No, I wasn't around in the Dark Ages. Right. This is the human condition to make things crazy. That's what we do.
Mm.
And when we stop caring that what other people think challenges our own beliefs. We will have peace in that sense. And there, I think, are a lot of people that, because of the technology and the platforms that we've got to say things like Ken Wilber says, right? And the more research you do on into him and into what he's doing, he's gone off the rails too.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? It was really good until like 2008, 2009, 2011. And then, but that's only from my perspective.
Yeah.
Right? And that's the point.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was like my introduction to it was I understood that he was a leader, and it also appeared that he had special outfits that he wore. And those are two red flags for me. But I said, you know what? It's okay that there are red flags up. You know, if there's a guy who people seem to be following and he has a special wardrobe, whatever. I have good enough self-defenses to not join a cult if that's what this is. You know, if they start talking about thetans or we came out of a vault, whatever. I don't care. I'll go for it. I'll jump in. Yeah, I've found it to be like a rewarding and challenging experience. So I think we're, even though, yeah, we might realize that this is not like a perfect philosophical system, it's interesting, it's inspirational, it's challenging. There's lots of great things about it. So yeah, I just was interested in your take on the whole thing. But when I said noticing that you were integral, it's interesting because I didn't even mean it in that context. It's just like you seemed to, I think it was the thing that attracted me to your work. And I really like what you're doing now because you brought all of these different pieces together into something that you've, you know, branded in your own way, which I think is definitely a real achievement. And if people in my audience want to get like introduced to your world, where's the place that you recommend they would start?
Dude, it's agame.com.
And what do they do when they get there?
Check out what's on the homepage. Here's what it is. Since I was about 11 or 12 years old, I've been looking for it. That thing we were just talking about. Deeper yeah. understanding so I could have a sense of safety, right? I looked in all of the corners of the world, right? There's nothing wrong with cults. If you can buy the ticket, take the ride, and drink a little bit of the Kool-Aid with understanding that you're actually doing it, there's a lot to be gained there, right? Yeah. So from religion to rationalists to magic and Wicca and all of the crazy, I've looked into a lot of it because I always struggled against myself. And as a grown-ass man with two kids who are about out on their own and the ability to do what I want with my own time, what is that? Continue to gain an understanding of it, meaning me. What I was looking for was a choose-your-own-adventure thing that I could play, I could input in my life 10, 15, 20 minutes a day that would allow me to maintain constant awareness so I can maintain my practice of being here now so I can be the master of my own game. But I wanted something that allowed me to do that. And it doesn't exist. Choose your own adventure, personal advancement game. That's what it is. Dude, it's a game.
Awesome. So from maybe like the second or third time that I got a Sales Guerrilla podcast episode to work on, I was like, I'm going to have that guy on my show. He's going to be a guest on my show someday. Now, we could have done a very, very specific, you've done a lot of deep dives on specifics on both Sales Guerrilla and in Dude, It's a Game. So we could have focused this whole conversation on one thing, but man, I fortunately for me got access to a lot of your new content. I've been reading your newsletters and just drinking all this stuff out of a fire hose to the point where for this podcast, I had admittedly overprepared. So I said, you know what? I'm throwing all this outline away. This is help my audience get to know Landon Porter. So that's what I wanted to do today. I'd love to in the future do a deep dive on something specific, but I also didn't want to give too much away of what you're doing. I want people to go and check it out because I think it's very cool. And I think that people who've been listening to School Sucks for a while would find that there's a lot of overlap with our goals and pursuits, but it's kind of in a new language and definitely in a new format that I think people would think is pretty cool. So they should go check it out.
Thanks, brother, man. And look, your dream that you manifested with the law of attraction, having me on your show, finally came true. How about that?
I can't put it all off on the law of attraction, but it was like Google Calendar was involved. But yeah, I get it. It was certainly a part of it. So this was absolutely great. I'm glad we finally did this, and I look forward to being able to have another conversation with you in the future.
Let's do it, brother man.
Awesome. Thanks, Landon.
Peace out. Used to ride the highway. I used to know where I was going. Now this shaded dirt road is feeling cool beneath my feet. Used to ride on to get to where I was going in a day. Now I've got to stop and go and stop.